Welcome to the Love-O Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Kavisho. Kavisho took sannyas in 1978 and was chosen by Osho as his medium during the energy transmission. Later on, Kavisho worked as Osho's personal librarian and nowadays she lives a simple life sharing Osho meditations with interested people. I'm so happy to have Kavisho on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Kavisho, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, Swaram. Thank you so much. And how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, actually. Feeling very good and so happy to be speaking with you. So to start, tell us a bit about how you came across Osho.
Like for many of us, it's a mystery. The background, the family I was born was quite intense, quite charged with religion. On one side, on my father's side, it was a very, very Catholic family with nuns and monks and missionaries. And on my mother's side, it was a very Protestant family with my grandfather being a Protestant priest and preacher, quite well known. And of course, I was sent to Catholic school. It was in the 50s and 60s. It was not fun. I was a bit suffocating in this environment where spontaneity was not much allowed, where nobody expressed anything. And in a way, when I look back, you know, it made sense. I had to transcend this. I had to bring it to a beyond all this conditioning and limitation and hypocrisy and difficulties. Yeah, I was carrying something in me because I remember being very like at age 6, you know, you do the first communion and you have to confess, and in that first confession I lost trust because I didn't know what to say, which sin I had committed at 6 years old. So I said I committed a big sin, and that created such trouble for me. I had to be interviewed by the mother superior, you know, they wanted to find out what big sin, and creating guilt about anything and everything. And one day I discovered in a dictionary about Buddha and Buddhism, and I became absolutely crazy angry. I felt betrayed. How dare my parents lied to me and said that there was only one God, one religion. So anyway, I had to escape from that family as soon as possible. And in a way, I was a fugitive. I was looking for a place that I could call home, for a place that the love and the light or the possibilities, you know, I felt inside myself could be found also on the outside, where I could connect, you know, where. And I think I was so, so lucky that Osho found me. He came to me in a dream, in a very powerful dream first, and then I kind of forgot about it, but not really. And then in the 70s, I was living in Ibiza. I escaped France. I lived in Morocco, and then I went to Ibiza where my sisters were living. And there I met the first sannyasin. I heard the name Bhagwan in Ibiza, but I thought it was somebody living in the island. It felt very exotic and very beautiful name. But it took me a long time there, you know, to connect. Until the day my girlfriend took me to the Osho Center, I mean to the meditation center. She needed something from somebody there. And when we arrived, it was in the middle of a meditation. People were listening to a discourse from Bhagwan. And that was, wow, the relaxation in that room, the silence, but especially the relaxation was so powerful. You know, we didn't want to disturb. I found a little space where I could sit. And I became just aware of how I was not relaxed, of my body, my breathing. You know, it was amplified, you know, and I realized, wow. I could not understand a word what Bhagwan was saying at that time. But that's how it started. And the biggest was when I was selling clothes at the hippie market in Ibiza during the summer. I was already obsessed with going to India for 4 years. It was in me, but I never managed to have enough money to go. But that day on the market, the Ari Pujan, who was taking care of the meditation center, came to me and offered me a head massage. And it was the most amazing head massage you can imagine. then send my head to the stars. And after this head massage, which must have been needed since lifetimes, he handed me a newsletter from Bhagwan. And on the front page was this big picture of Bhagwan's face in black and white and his eyes. And once I was headless, I started to read this newsletter. Wow. It felt like for many of us that those words that I was reading, it was like he was reading something that was inside of me that was not formulated yet. And I remember feeling, oh, wow, he exists. There is one real human being on this planet. Wow. Now I know there is one real human being here. Wow. And from then on, it became so easy to make money and go to India. It was almost like the wind blowing and carrying me to Bhagwan.
Wow, that's very beautiful. And I feel I resonate a lot with what you just said and the way you described how Osho was talking to you and articulating something within you. I had a very similar experience when I first read Osho. So beautiful. So you went to India, you took sannyas, I think it was the late 70s. And then at some point, Osho started an experiment. He introduced a new experiment called Energy Darshan. And you were chosen to be part of it. So first of all, for people who don't know much about this Energy Darshan experiment, can you explain what that was? And then I'd love to hear more if you can talk us through your own experience of that.
Well, it happened that I was there the first at the Darshan when he first started to talk about the change in his work, and he started to talk about this new phase. And immediately inside me, I said, oh, I want to be part of it. For me, it was something, he also worked on me through those energy Darshan, I mean, with desire, you know. Immediately the desire came in me to be one of the mediums. Of course, but it didn't happen so fast and so easily. And I've been always very, very attracted and sensitive and at ease with energy. So I received some energy darshan first, and it was very, very powerful. So my experience of it was like a transmission. Instead of sitting silently and listening to him and, you know, tuning in very intimately with him, somehow you were in a very open space with him, and he was creating a very intense energy field around this energy darshan, calling mediums like hollow bamboos through which his energy could go through. And so in a way, it amplifies it. The more people, you know, being present and being open, the more it amplified his energy. It was very, very wild. I remember my first energy darshan, I felt like some energy moving, you know, from the first chakra to the very top and getting a bit stuck at the throat, but going through it. So I was shaken, and something happened that stayed with me for weeks after that. But each time it was a different experience. But I think the common experience in all this was that at the end of the energy darshan, you were left like at the bottom of the ocean. You were left in such a deep, 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 relaxed, empty space, totally at home. There was absolutely no mind, you know, that we were like thrown into that space. It was like being in a whirlwind of energy that carried you away, and it's very hard to describe, but basically for me that's the experience I had. And then, of course, one time I got invited to be a guest medium. It was out of the blue. I was not, you know, the desire was not there. I think I was just coming back from the West. And that very day I arrived, I got the message that I was invited as a guest medium the same evening. With Osho was always now, you know, now, immediate. It's not tomorrow, never tomorrow. So I was, you know, I was so touched, and I had this experience of being a guest medium. And of course, the next day, the desire was there so strong. Will I be called again? You know, and when you were being called, it was around 2 p.m. It happened at 2 p.m. through Vivek at Lao Tzu Gate, at the gate before the entrance of Osho's house. So the desire was there. And as long as the desire was there, it didn't happen. So it was very interesting. Like, for example, I worked in a sauna in those days, and the girlfriend who was working there with me, we were maybe three or four, she got invited to be a permanent medium. So every day I was confronted with my desire. Just, you know, she was shining with it, and my desire was there. So the day or the moment I was totally contented with my life and what is, oof, I was called again as a guest medium. So this happened four times, I think, in a year.
Sounds like Osho was working in a double way with you. In one way, he was working using this desire that you had to be part of it to kind of train you to go beyond desires and only give it to you when you had no desire. And on the other way, there was the actual experience that you described before, which I totally appreciate. It's very hard to put into words, but somehow it sounds to me as if Osho was provoking these high energy fields to then give people who were there a chance to experience silence and meditation. So I'd love to go a little bit deeper on that. So I think it's somehow impossible to understand the work of a master and know why he was doing what he was doing. But for you personally, in your experience being there, how did that experiment change you?
Oh, it's hard to say because, you know, it was of course a very a very strong experience, a highlight in my life with Osho for sure. But there were so many things going on, you know, on a daily basis. It was continuous. This was one out of so many other things going on. But I could say that it's to learn the art to disappear, you know, to be a hollow bamboo, to turn in and just be, because each time there was something very strong happening in life or in life with Osho or with Osho for me personally, intimately, it was always in this moment where you disappear, where you are in a non, you're not with your ego, you're not with your personality, you're not in the past, not in the future. It's very difficult to describe, but it was learning the art, because also while Energy Darshan was happening, we were many mediums. And we were sitting by the side, and then he will call us, you know, he will call a few of us, sometimes all of us. And you know, yeah, he would call you when you didn't have a desire there also to be called. It was a very subtle and fine line about, you know, being a hollow bamboo. So you could say that this could be one of the things I learned or that developed in me. I don't know. It's very difficult to say. Then to be able to handle the energy, you know, because it was very powerful. So dancing, you had to be very grounded, the feet really grounded on the soil, very centered and very open. And then sway your hands up and let, you know, go with this energy, welcome it, participate in it, be part of it. And then when it stopped, you know, it suddenly stopped, it was almost dizzy, like I was going to faint or fall down, you know. So it was like breathing, take deep breaths, being centered, and then we had to sit down. And many times I thought, sit down, I was going to fall, you know. It was hard to find my balance again and get all this energy quiet again inside of me. So this also is like you learn to be more and more centered, more and more grounded. The more you're grounded, the more you're centered, the more you can fly high. It's like roots and wings. And I think that's in so many ways what I learned from Osho, you know, the duality, to embrace both dualities. It's, how can I say, words and silence, movement and stillness, mind and no mind, logic and intuition. It was constantly there. In so many ways, all along with Osho.
And I think this is very valuable because I've seen so many pictures and videos of people receiving energy from Osho, and you can see these ecstatic faces and all these amazing, mysterious phenomenon happening there. So it's beautiful that for the first time I hear directly from someone who was there to kind of give a little bit of context, and also what you've learned, which is, you know, much more than just, you know, Osho touching your third eye. So thank you for that. So let's jump a few years later. In 1987, you again were chosen by Osho, but in this case for a different job. And in this case, you were chosen to be his librarian. And I'd like to take this opportunity to mention that Osho had in his library 100,000 books, which he read, and probably he read many more books than that. Someone said 150,000 in his short lifespan. And personally, I'm not aware of any other human being who was able to read so many books and remember them all. So these books are beautifully kept, even to today in his in the resort, what is called now the resort in Pune, where he used to live. So what can you talk us through how it was to manage 100,000 books, and perhaps you can tell us what was your job as a librarian?
Yeah, I got the invitation to work in Osho's library. I didn't realize at first I was kind of being in charge of the library in some way. it was at the time when all those books, they had been sent to America, to the ranch in Oregon, but they were never taken out of the boxes there. His library was never set up there. Then they were coming back, and I remember it was monsoon when I started to be there, and so we had trucks full of boxes delivering all those boxes to the balcony of the library. So, and the library was all empty. It was empty shelves all over. And it had already started. There were already a few people working there before I started. And the woman who was Osho's librarian was waiting for me, you know, to explain to me the job. And it was just a few sentences. It was to touch the books with grace and arrange them on the shelves by size and color, not by subject. And I think that was about it. So, like many times with Osho, you jumped into a new situation, into a new work with, you know, very few indication how you should do it. And to me, it was very amazing that the criterion was aesthetic in a way. It was not, you know, sometimes library can be something heavy or heavy energy. You know, there is some silence and some heavy energy and it's kind of a church-like atmosphere. This was not at all the case in Osho's library. So it was like a kid's children play. We emptied those boxes. We put books by size on the carpet. We made big piles of books by size. And then we took one book of each pile and put it on the shelf. But then what happened is that, you know, of course you're tempted. You have a book in between your hands. You read the title, you open it. And then you see Osho's signature. He signed every book. And he put the date when he read the book at the last page of the book. So sometimes we find those paintings in the first page of the book. So it started right there. Suddenly somebody would scream, wow! And we all looked at an amazing painting. So I kept this way. We kept this way of organizing the books, but we put all the paintings aside. And then we find out that some books he had put, he had marked them. He put little points, red dots or blue dots on the side, you know, on some pages. And then, of course, we started to read, you know, it was some highlights, something he found interesting in that book. So we also put those books aside. And then, so it started to be organized like that very organically. And very soon after, we started to, there was a main room called Ramakrishna. And in that main room, we started to put all the special books. And then there was this huge, very long corridor that had shelves. I mean, basically, Osho himself has said, those are my words, though I don't remember exactly how he said it, that in the beginning, he had the library in his house, but soon he had a house in the library. And so it was a huge, huge library. Very soon, we started to talk computer and computerize. So we got all excited. We started, David and I, we started to look how to create a software, you know, for the organization, for research. So it would be very easy for any research possible to classify those books and cross-references and all that. And as soon as we started with to put the books in the computer, it means we already had few shelves organized. And so there was a name of the room. And then we said, you know, we gave numbers to the shelves. And after 1 week, we started put books in the computer. Osho asked if all the books were in, as if we had finished after 1 week. And it took about 6 years to do it. And It was a bit like Gurdjieff style of work. It means that after we finished, it took, I think, maybe a year to finish Trauma Krishna, to fill up all the shelves and put all the books in the computer. That suddenly was decided we were going to change the floor, put marble floor, so we all move our working space somewhere. When the marble floor was done, then we decided to change the shelves, so all the books went back into boxes. It was a constant movement. It was an endless work. It was not linear. It was not one-dimensional, as always with Osho. It was multidimensional. And what I learned from that constant change, constant moving, it was this sentence: the journey itself is the goal. So you could not be there with a goal, project in the future. Yes, you had the intention, of course. But then the now, today, the journey is today. The goal is today, is now. Again and again and again and again.
Yeah, no, I think this is something that just came up in my life quite recently, because I'm here in Singapore and I feel like it's a transition. I don't see this as a permanent thing, but at the same time, I need to learn how to enjoy this transition as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, it's my life here and now, so I can't just think, okay, in 3 years when I'm done with Singapore, I will start living life. No. Life is here and now. It's the journey that is...
Yes,
so, thanks for that reminder.
Yes. So, and also life serves a transition, you know. We don't know for how long we are here. It's like, yeah, we are here to learn, we're here to wake up, we're here to love, to, you know. So it's now, it's not tomorrow.
Yeah, that's beautiful, and thanks for reminding me that. So Osho is a mystic, right? So he teaches meditation, not philosophy. So in your opinion, how come he read so many books?
Is Osho, you know, is such a phenomenon, such an amazing life, and the many dimensions and the dynamism, the aliveness, you know, the intense aliveness around Osho. What I read, you know, there is one man, Swami Niten, Peter Ewald, that made a book that's called The Source Book, and he made an amazing, mind-blowing research on Osho from his childhood and his death, all around, everything Osho wrote, write, said. I mean, so from all his research, I read that, for example, at age, you know, early teenager, Osho was at his school in a small village in Gadawara. Before he was 10 or 11, he had read all the books of the library in this village or in this town. And books were, he was so eager, he was so hungry to read. I understood and I read, it was part of his search. You know, he was hungry to understand everything that's going on. And there was an immense respect, in a way, for the intelligence, you know, of human beings, for their, because like in the library, we had in the library books that he kept those books. He also wanted, he was treating books with deep respect. He didn't like to lend books, especially if people were going to make marks or damage the books. And so as soon as he started gathering books as a child, then as a teenager, then as a professor, those books were following him. So he always had the books around him. And then some of them, most of them are in the library in Pune, in a resort. I got lost now. I don't know what was your question. How such a mystic. So I think I heard him say, or I read, that for a while he was searching. So to read, you know, all those books on philosophy, psychology, literature. I think he has read huge amount of literature already young teenager. So he was much more literate than any of his teachers. You know, he has such a bright, fast intelligence already very young. He could handle 1,500 books in a week. And I don't know how he was reading. He certainly had a photographic memory, because once he read the book once, so he had it between his hands, he could give, you know, quotation, citation, even even remembering the book or the color of the book, the color of the cover of the book. So, but then what I read, I think, is that the moment he got enlightened, he didn't need to read anymore all this. But he felt that in this age, to gather his people around him, to reach out to the biggest number of people possible, he could not be sitting under a tree silently like Buddha. He had to absorb all this culture, knowledge of the whole world, all the culture, all the countries in a way, to be able to give his talks. And it was like gathering, you know, the tool to throw his net and catch as many people as possible. Okay, so when I started in the library in 87, Osho had already stopped reading. I think he stopped reading in 81. And at that time, his secretary was in charge also of, you know, reading the newspaper and then telling him what's going on. Or maybe, I don't know, with the books, if there were some interesting books, maybe make a synopsis. So in 87, it was already quite a while he was not reading anymore. Still, he was asking us to keep buying books. So all the books we thought could be interesting. And whenever there was one that really seemed very interesting to us, we made a synopsis, and then it was sent through his secretary to him. So, you know, this is a big contradiction with Osho, or polarities, you know, that he absorbed all of this to bring us silence, you know, to sit with him. It was very interesting what he was saying, but like it went through phases for the whole community, you know. It was a collective energy. Like in Punawan, I remember we were sitting with him, and we find the discourse extraordinary. Always, each day was the best one. But at the end of the discourse, we couldn't say what he talked about. We were so high. We were bathing in an ocean of silence, of bliss. I don't know, you know, it's like the whole garden was enlightened. The whole space was to have spent, you know, 2 hours sitting with the sound of his voice and the silence, because he speaks so with so many gaps, so much silence. So in a way, he had to absorb all this, all those books, all this world of culture and mind, to teach us silence, to go beyond, the mind. And yeah, and you see in his meditation techniques, it's the same. We have to move down from the mind into the body. So before you sit silently, you re-enter your body through intense breathing or dancing or whatever. But you have to incarnate your body and move and shake, and then you can sit. So extreme movement and stillness, and always live music, intense energy. For me, Osho was certainly a master of energy. He created such an energy field around him. It was so alive. There was an aliveness. Amazing. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for shedding lights on this topic of the books, which I personally am very interested in. And I love what you said about Osho had respect for human intelligence. And I also, that's one of the reasons why I love books, because, you know, some people spend years to condense in few hundred pages, years and years of their own understanding of life and research, and so many hours, and they are condensed, and we can read this book in few days, or like Osho, probably in few minutes, and absorb all of that. And it's such a gift. So books are incredible. And then also I wanted to say that I also have that same experience that you described before, that sometimes I hear Osho discourses and that's so beautiful, and I come out of that and I want to share and say, hey, you know, Osho said this. And but the moment I start kind of repeating what Osho said, I can't. Either I can't formulate, or it comes out in such a dull way and so stupid. And I don't know what happens, but, you know, because I think it's not just it's the context and the energy and that space that Osho brings you, where either you read or you listen to discourse, which is such a different quality. So yeah, it's interesting that, you know, it's the same for you guys when you were sitting with him.
And I love to listen to Osho. I love to listen to a whole series, you know, at the time. And then every time, no matter how many times I listen to one discourse, every time time I hear something new that's just relevant for now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And for me, what I understood is that the more I grow into my meditation, the more I'm able to understand. Sometimes I listen to the same discourse for I don't know how many times, and every time I kind of deeper, I understand a bit more. So that's magic. So we're heading towards the end, but before I ask you a few final questions, I also know that you are in love with Osho's paintings, and not many people know, but Osho also enjoyed painting a lot. And just recently I was in Pune a few weeks ago, and I looked at some of the paintings in display in the resort, and they're so beautiful. So I know that you fell in love with Osho's paintings. So I'd love to hear more about what is about Osho's painting that touches you?
Ah, for me, the surprise, the diversity, the colorful, you know, the colors, and the fact that they were painted, I mean, it's not painting, it's the wrong word. He used felt tip pens. And at that time, I don't know why those pens were found defectuous later on, and they were not manufactured anymore. But what happened is, like, when he used a felt tip pen, a color one, it was kind of bleeding, you know, as soon as it touched the paper, the ink was spreading. And there is an innocence, a spontaneity. To me, this is what I received from those paintings. They're a bit, some of them are, to me, psychedelic. They feel very playful, spontaneous, just like butterflies, you know. There is just the expression of a moment. And the surprise, because they're inside the book, so you open the book, you know, you're ready, you see a title, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit serious, it's a book, there's a title and author, and then boom, oh, you open and you see this flash of lights and colors, and so amazing, you know, each one so different and very playful. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. They are very different and playful. Yeah, that's actually the right word. Like a child playing with color.
Yeah.
Okay, so I also understand that you live in France, in a little bit of a remote part of France, but you share Osho meditation with interested people. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, it goes by waves, you know. It's basically a bit difficult to find people who really want to get involved with meditation. So it happens once in a while. Also, I don't have a space, you know. If I had a space where it would happen all the time, maybe. But it goes by waves. At a friend's place who has a beautiful space, then some people come. And now maybe, I don't know, because there is a rumor that maybe I might be going to live in the United States again, then suddenly it's happening. So soon there is a meditation camp, so a whole weekend is happening with all the people that have been in contact with me all those years, and many more. And so I'm very happy about that.
That's fantastic. So if people want to know more, perhaps they live in France or they pass by your area and they want to participate, is there a way that they can get in touch with you?
Sure. How can they get in touch with me? I have an email, which is premkavisho@gmail.com. And one word, premkavisho. And kavisho is KAVISHO.
Fantastic. So I'll link your email address to the show notes.
Okay, great.
So we are nearly at the end of the show, and I've got three final questions for you. So the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Okay, I don't really have a routine, but I could say what's common to every day is that as soon as I wake up in my bed, I start to wake up, I kind of nourish that space when the mind is not yet awake. So I enjoy the feeling of the body, the deep relaxation, the coziness, and I bring my attention there. Because if not, the mind jumps in with a to-do list, you know, suddenly I remember, oh, to-do. At this time today I have to do. And so I nourish that space consciously and tenderly before the mind really wakes up, kind of. I give him permission to wake up a little later. And then when I go to the kitchen, then I light candles. This I do every day. I light candles out of gratitude, to express my gratitude, and also to connect for a few minutes with all the friends. If some friends left their body recently, or some friends are going through some difficulties with sickness and or whatever kind of difficulties that I'm aware of, then I spend a moment connecting and then the routine is over. But some days I listen to Osho while I prepare my breakfast, and when I listen to Osho, I start a series and I go through the whole series. It might take a month, 2 months. Sometimes I don't listen to Osho. I listen to some music, and so that's how I start the day.
So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
My favorite Osho meditation has been Kundalini. Because I'm somebody who has a lot of energy and I could have a tendency to be a bit hooked in my head. So the shaking part for me is extraordinary because I feel, you know, I'm surrounded, like you in Singapore and me here in France, I'm surrounded by an energy field that's not an Osho energy field. And so I'm affected by it in a way. So by shaking, anything that got a bit stuck or fixed or linear in me, I'm shaking all the logic, I'm shaking all the shaking everything and making space in myself and becoming fluid again and in touch with my being. So I loved Kundalini. When I discovered it, I think I did it for 2 years, every day. Now I do it once in a blue moon. When I feel I'm a bit stressed, it's more like an exercise. It's a delight, it's a joy. But my favorite meditation here is to walk in nature by myself. This is my favorite meditation now.
The last question is, you live the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
It means to be aligned, to be true, to be authentic, to keep a sense of humor, to remember that humor, or to keep a sense of humor about myself and about all the tricks of life, that life is also the teacher, you know, the ultimate teacher, and to be open, to be a disciple is to be open to learn. So there is always so many situations in life, in daily life, that we can learn, and remember that the journey itself is a goal. Yeah,
that's the end. Really, thank you so much, because I personally discovered so many new things on the Danish Energy Darshan, on the books, and also this final answer you gave for me personally is very significant, and it's a good reminder for me. And so really thank you for sharing your love for Osho and your experience and everything you have learned in your life being with a master. And send you lots of love and a big hug.
Yes. Thank you so much, Swaram. And I hope that you too, one day you are interviewed and you share how it is for you to be with Osho. I think it's very, very valuable, you know.
Okay, sure. I'll do that. For now, I'm happy to interview you guys and do the podcast. And I do have a blog where I think I shared that a little bit about my understanding.
I've seen it. I really appreciate it. Yes. Thank you, Swaram. And love to chat now.
Thank you so much, Kavisho. Lots of love to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.